Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Huvane Wealth Management Conversation today. My name is Tom Huvane, and I'm a Managing Director and Wealth Advisor at UBS. Today's topic is a conversation with the Vice Chairman. I'm very excited to have Ed Montero with me today. Ed is currently a Vice Chairman with UBS Americas, and before that, he had an exciting 50-year career with Citibank as a co-founder of the Citi Private Bank. Ed is also a successful immigrant to the United States from Colombia, where his family initially settled into Westchester County. Myself, Ed, and my associate, Brendan Murphy, who many of you may know, also share our alma mater of Fordham University in the Bronx campus here in New York, where we all studied economics. So, Ed, welcome, and thank you for being with us today.
Delighted to be here with you, Tom, with your team, and, of course, with your dear clients.
Thank you, Ed. So let's jump right in. At 35 years old, you found yourself in charge of the chemical industry for Citibank as a very young man. A great opportunity, but also a tremendous amount of responsibility. You currently mentor rising stars here at UBS of the next generation. What advice would you give to young people today who are working really hard to grow their careers just as you did?
Well, I'm delighted to share some of my experiences, Tom, after a long career, sort of to give back some. I actually gave a talk to executive directors a while back as they were plotting to become managing directors, and I've taken a few pointers from that talk, and I think it would be helpful to cover four or five of them. I think the first one that I would share with people is absolute integrity and comportment. Nothing can derail a career in business in a bank like ours for failing to adhere to that. In my experience, I've met a number of people, happily not many, but highly trained from the best universities who cut corners, and that derailed their careers. In this topic, fidelity to our clients is vital. And I'd say one other thing that I think is important in this first topic, and that is if you make a mistake, and we all make mistakes, particularly in the earlier part of our careers, own up to it and correct it. I'll share with you just one quick anecdote. Way back in the 70s, so way before many of you were born, I was working on the DuPont account, and it was my first trip to Wilmington to call on the treasurer of the company, a guy who was a gentleman who was very, very tough, and reputation as being very correct but tough with bankers, particularly young bankers, and he asked me about the Eurodollar market, which was just beginning. The Eurodollar market started in the 1970s. Yep. I did not answer the question correctly, and I knew it. I didn't really, I knew as I spoke that it wasn't the correct thing, and then just my ride back from Wilmington to New York was just awful, and I knew that I had made a mistake, and then that night I really, in my mind, found out exactly what was the answer, called him the next day, apologized, and said, "Mr. Boxbaum, this is what it is." This actually initiated a relationship. And I, over time, as I grew up as a banker, got to do a lot of business with them, became their co-lead bank, and I was one of the few bankers that attended his retirement party. So, again, you make a mistake, correct it, own up to it, and get back to it, because we will all make mistakes in our career. A second point, Tom, that I would highlight in my experience is passion for your work. You must have passion for what you do, and your workers, co-workers will notice it, and particularly your clients will know whether you really care for what you're doing, whether you give a damn or not. Thirdly, I would encourage people to adopt or to show or to have a high degree of energy, which I believe I have. Think of the health practices that will help you achieve this. In my own case, and I'm much older than you guys, I work out every day. And I find that this working out helps me, keeps me healthy, but helps me process information. And remember, we are all knowledge workers. This is how we get paid. And we passing information, correct information. And being in good health helps you and helps you to do that. I would say that a very important thing for all of the men and women in this call, and young people in this call, is to be informed. And I mean to be really informed. I read the Wall Street Journal every day of my life and have done so for all of my career. absolutely vital that you do that. I also read one book a month. I don't always get there, maybe every other month, but books, not necessarily novels, but books that actually improve your knowledge base. You don't stop with a degree from Fordham College, as the three of us, or the four of us on this call, have had. It's a continuous education process, and we are advantaged working at UBS with the amazing research and fountain of knowledge that we have available to not only educate ourselves on a continuous basis, but also to pass this information to our dear clients. I would consider, depending on your interests, studying other languages. I personally studied Portuguese. I speak Portuguese extremely well, and I use it almost every day in work. But this idea of learning another language and picking up another culture is, I think, very, very, very helpful. And I would say, in this sort of first question of yours, Tom, as a fifth point, always maintain your values. Behave in our corporate society with the utmost concern for our commitment to diversity, our belief in diversity and inclusion, and really respect for your coworkers. There's no excuse for not having that. So anyway, that's kind of how I would respond to your question, and I hope some of these ideas are helpful to the young people on the call.
No, those are really great, Ed, and thank you for that outlining. That's, you know, 50 plus years right there of lessons that you've learned, and sometimes the hard way. You know, integrity, having integrity, own your mistakes, and having passion for your work, and getting up every day excited about what you do, and have energy, being informed about what you're doing, constantly educating yourself. You know, it's one of the things I talk a lot about myself is, you know, every single day we're constantly reading and reading and reading and just trying to get smarter and better at what we do, you know, and finally maintaining your values and, you know, and making sure that you're having a diverse workforce and inclusion, and really just respect the people you work with. And these are not only things that I see in our practice and here at UBS, but it's also something I see with my most successful clients and even their children. So those are great words to live by. So thank you for that. So, you know, Ed, like my own parents, I'm first generation American. You know, you enter the United States with your family in the 1950s from Colombia, as I said earlier. Your dad ended up returning to Colombia, and with nine kids in your family, boy, a very busy household there. And as one of the older siblings, you took on the parental role for many of your younger siblings. So how do you think about the immigrant experience? You know, what you went through, what others are going through, and what are the opportunities available today?
Sure. Well, that's a wonderful question, Tom. We came here as a family in 1954, and my dad's vision was to have his children learn English and have a chance at this American experience, which he had had some knowledge of, but not far from complete. The idea was that we would go back, but due to financial circumstances and otherwise, parents separated, and I did take on the chore at a very young age of leading a parenting aide.
Right.
And that's why I commuted, not boarded, to Fordham in the Bronx. But in any event, I think, and so we came here, we didn't speak any English. I didn't speak any English until I was 10. And this country was entirely different in the 50s than it is today. It was much less diverse. It was a wonderful place that did give people opportunity, and that opportunity continues to exist today. I believe that anybody that comes to this country who adheres to some of the principles I mentioned before, particularly integrity and energy and so forth, if they put their mind to something, they can do it. They can form a company. This company can grow. If you look at the high-tech people today that are the zillionaires of our economy, almost all of them are either immigrants or the children of immigrants, and they're able to do it. So I think that, and we see this all the time, people that come here as gardeners, and they develop a small business, and eventually that grows even more. So if you apply yourself, if you maintain a sense of values and integrity and work hard, the American experience is still here today. and people can prosper. And I think we do need immigrants. We need immigrants to come in correctly. But if we continue to do this, this country will continue to grow. So I'm very excited. Now think about me. I am a boy born in the Andes Mountains in a city called Manizales, Colombia. And through hard work and some of the points that you made, I've been fortunate, and I've been very fortunate and very lucky to have senior positions at two of the most important financial institutions in the world. So I deeply believe in the American experience.
Wow, that's a great endorsement of the immigrant story as well as the future of what the immigrant story can be. It's the American dream is still there for those who wish to pursue it. I think you'd agree with that.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's no question.
Great, great. Well, thank you for that, Ed. So let's turn to markets. We're an investment firm. We deal in markets. We talk about them. We have opinions on them. So let's turn a little bit to some of the opportunities in markets. And you spent a great deal of your career in Latin America. And UBS, as a firm today, is currently optimistic on the emerging markets, who continue to just grow their share of gross domestic product. Can you talk about the opportunities that you're seeing for investors in emerging markets?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to. And yes, I've spent, although in my brief at UBS, I looked to Canada and the U.S. as well, probably 70% of my time is spent on Latin America. And in my career, I've always had something to do with Latin America from the very beginning. So I've lived in Mexico, where I ran Citibank's business in Mexico, and as an intern or trainee, I spent time in Nicaragua, so I know that part of the world. But I really know all the countries, and so I follow them, and I have an affinity and a love for Latin America, but also have spent time in Asia and other emerging markets. So in general, I think you said it, emerging markets have a higher rate of growth, higher rate of GDP growth. And will continue to do so for the foreseeable future as their populations increase at a faster rate than we in the developed markets tend to grow. And by the way, more than half of the population in the world are emerging markets. So you have China, you have Asia, you have Latin America, you have Africa, and they have more population than if you take the U.S. and Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and the developed countries. The emerging markets are going through a very tough time right now. COVID has hit them very hard. Has hit them very hard because they don't have as much of the medicines, and I think some of the policies of the leaders of these countries were helter-skelter. They weren't quite as focused as they should have been. But they're going to get over it, and they're going to get back to growth. And what I want to give you a feel for is that emerging markets, as they grow faster, the people in these countries have many of the same aspirations as we do. If you think about it, they need housing, they need transportation, they need banking. Eventually, as they move up the scale, they need second homes. They will have vacations. They'll need insurance, and eventually, even as they get more sophisticated, the trusts and the estate planning. For passing of the wealth to the next generation. So the opportunities are enormous over time. You asked me about Latin America specifically, and there are 20 countries or so that one could talk about, but the two countries that I like the best are Brazil and Mexico. I like them because they're the largest, they have population growth, and they're pretty well advanced in terms of their industrial base. Their economic model has changed over time, from an import substitution model to more manufacturing. They do have the issue of being commodity-based, which means that they have cycles. But these two countries have pretty good fiscal policies, and their central banks are well-managed. So you tend to have more stability over time. And as they come out of COVID, we're going to see growth. Specific industries, and we have our CIO that speaks to specific areas to invest in, but areas such as fintech. Brazilians, for example, are highly computer literate, And yet, at the same time, as is with other markets, Brazil and Mexico, their share, the population share of banking is low compared to the share that we have here, you might have in the UK. So if you were to think about the banking sector, I'm not necessarily recommending it here, but if it could be very interesting because people are going to be going up the scale and using more banking. Fintech is very interesting in both Mexico and Brazil. So now, I would say Asia, and I just quickly mentioned, is an area that is that you know we are very focused on in UBS. And in kind of conclusion in my comments here, any well-diversified portfolio should have some position in emerging markets because that's where over time the growth is going to be. I'd be curious, Tom, if you ask, let me ask you a question. What are you advising clients to do in this area?
Well, I mean, as you may know, Ed, you know, many of the beginnings and the starting point for us is always to start the conversation with our clients and potential clients with a financial plan. It really helps us understand what their goals are, what they're really trying to achieve with their wealth. And from there, that helps us determine what their asset allocation should be. You know, what percentage of their liquid assets they should have in stocks and what portion they should have in fixed income and, of course, how much or how little should they have in their cash. As far as stocks go, as we sit here today in mid-July, UBS is focused on the reopening of the U.S. economy and overweighting more cyclical-type companies and stocks in our clients' portfolios to take advantage of, as we call it, the reflation of the U.S. economy and the rest of the world. From an international exposure, we are focused on emerging markets, as you had just said. Many of the international and emerging markets are probably around 6 months behind us as it comes to the coming out of the pandemic. So there's still a great amount of opportunities there and potentially where the next wave of appreciation could be in equities. So your comments today are really insightful on that point. In the fixed income, you know, we still like floating rate and municipal bonds, municipal bonds which help our clients keep their taxable income to a minimum. So those are really some of the areas that we're focused on right now, Ed, and I think where we think the future opportunities will be over the next 6, 12, and 18 months. We're quite optimistic on the economy, and so we're positioned to take advantage of that. So thank you for that question, Ed. I appreciate that. We like to end these conversations on a little bit of a lighter note. And I know, Ed, from what you've just said, you've traveled the world extensively. You've had some really interesting stories from your 50-year career at Citibank and now at UBS. Is there a particular experience or interesting story that you could share or would like to share with us today?
I'd be happy to. Well, I have so many, and let me give you one that I think you'd enjoy. By the way, it's five. I'm on my sixth year at UBS, so I'm on my 56th year of banking. I don't know. Probably
Citibank's way in the background now. It's starting to disappear.
Way in the background. But I'm going with our church in Florida to Israel next year, and that reminded me of a story with a client that we had back in the 90s. This woman made their fortune in Venezuela in the steel industry, became very rich, but they were Israeli, and they were clients of ours. And she became a widow and had no heirs, lost her husband and then lost her son. And the team that handled her account asked me, and I had met her several times, so we were good friends, but asked me if I would talk to her because they were very concerned that as she had all of this money, was alone, was having many people asking her to join them in different ventures, and they're concerned that she might invest in a way which would lose some of the money and, in fact, not be protected. So I, in fact, took her to lunch. I remember the Four Seasons right across the street from the firm on Park Avenue, and said to her, you know, you really need to be protected. You really need to, and I don't care which financial institution you work with, but you need to have a trust or a foundation to protect yourself. She said to me at that lunch, Ed, you're right, and I'm going to do it with you. In any event, I became advisor to her foundation in Israel, and she used part of her money to create a charity, a foundation on the Sea of Galilee in Tiberias. And
mm-hmm.
when that foundation was inaugurated, I was, as the one of the advisors, invited to attend the opening gala. And the story I want to tell you, which is amazing, she was a friend of Yitzhak Rabin, who was then the premier, the prime minister of Israel.
Wow.
And on the, he came to the dinner, and we sat at the same table. And this was the first day that his first peace foray with the Arab world. He had been to Syria that morning, came back for the dinner. And I have to tell you, it was one of the most exciting things that I've done in my career, private banking. Being with this gentleman, the mood in that dinner, and all the young soldiers were just, we're going to have peace finally. Of course, that didn't happen. He was killed 6 months later by a terrorist.
Right.
But it was, and I just share this story because it's just one of the wonderful things about the work, Tom, that you and your team and I do and all our colleagues at UBS is engaging with wonderful families that have great stories. And we are the beneficiaries of that, those relationships. So anyway, that's my story.
Great. No, that's fantastic. That's it just shows you when you put yourself out there and you help educate your client and really look out for them and watch out for everything that they're doing. You know, interesting and exciting things like that can certainly happen in your life. So thank you for sharing that story, Ed. That's a great one.
I don't want to talk about clients, but this particular client is passed on, sadly, and has no heirs. Of course, I didn't mention the name anyway, but we do have
right.
utmost confidentiality, but it's a story that on that basis could be shared.
Right. Great. Thank you. So, Ed, I want to thank you again today for really sharing your time and your tremendous expertise, you know, with us today. I think our clients and our younger generation clients will really get, you know, quite a bit. We really unpacked a lot of stuff here today, the immigrant story, the advice to young people, talked about the markets, and heard your interesting stories, and that's all great for us to learn and to, you know, help us as we move forward and we help advise our clients. So thank you for that. And for those of you who have any questions on our conversation today, or if you'd like to continue this conversation, you can reach our team at ubs.com/team/Huvane, H-U-V-A-N-E. So thank you all for your time today, and we look forward to the next conversation.